the fulfillment of the archetypal number of liberated viras, the Einherjar, the earth shall herself be transfigured, mutating herself, regenerating herself. And thus the Enkronos Saturn-Satan will have one and be redeemed, the Fenrir wolf will also devour the Jew, Jehovah and the Demiurge. When the Jew thinks it has won, seizing power over the earth, the liberating, the soul of the earth, will destroy it, disintegrating its demiurgic matter. Only the resurrected hero shall remain beyond the stars. Thus Serrano foresees the impossibility of attaining any earthly victory for the white race and places all hope for their redemption in alchemy. Perhaps Serrano was an agent, just as were Yockey and Spengler, putting forth a doctrine of resignation and escapism. It seems doubtful, as he claimed that fighting against the enemy in combat was an essential task, an Aryan duty, and thus we cannot charge him with these. Nonetheless, the impression left upon the reader of his works is that of apathy, of inevitability, of the Fenris wolf engulfing all material life in his jaws as the cycles of time come to a close. Ragnarok will not be helped through cowardly resignation or escaped from, however inevitable it may be, and the white race will not attain resurrection through cowardly escapism. Thus Serrano would assist the white race in spite of the desperation of the Age of Lead, and assists in orienting them along their proper path towards the green ray through the black sun of individuation, overcoming the demiurgic rational consciousness of the yellow sun of mind. The awakening of the submerged continent of Atlantis, restored Hyperborea, discovering the entrance to the interior hollow earth, means a reactivation of the thunderbolt force emanating from third eye, the pineal gland, which he speaks of as bearing the name Kum, supreme will, Shadabudhishvabeva, Ibid. This is the Seg thunderbolt, the Graal or Graal light. Awakening the third eye leads the Aryan back to the state of the Divyas and to the spiritualization of the material body. The hero must march over the razor's edge, conquering physical sex and overcoming rationalist thought, before he can reach the submerged continent of Atlantis, restored Hyperborea. This is the project of Serrano and of all Aryan initiates, and must become the project of all whites in order to overcome the state of lead they are now subject to as a divine spark trapped within the Zion Matrix Froma, and to transform themselves and their people even as they combat the enemy. Whether Serrano's conceptions have a basis in fact as regards Hitler being an avatar and the inevitability of the destruction of our world as a material structure is questionable. Much of the writings of Serrano are related to the Gnostic Luciferian ideology of Mani the Manichean, of a dualistic spirit versus matter conception, of a denigration of rational intellectual thought and an overemphasis on right brain consciousness. Perhaps his intention was to take the already destabilized mind of the children of the Kali Yuga, the Uyghurized Zion, the robots of the Demiurge that most have become, and attempt to emphasize the modality of consciousness necessary for a transmutation of the consciousness through a balanced integration of opposites. That the world of Roma, the Judeo-Christian world, emphasizes a rationalist-materialist modality of consciousness juxtaposed with that of an emotionalism tied to the lower drives creates the useful functional slave robot of the Jew world order that is a serviceable tool of Dre in its enslavement of the earth in the matrix prison of Zion. However, to simply cast aside reason is of no use in fighting the dark forces of the world, and reason is in fact essential as a tool in one's arsenal against the enemy and to tactical engagement with the enemy and overcoming all of his many traps and stumbling blocks. This may not be what Serrano is contending, but it leaves this impression upon the reader and may be valuable to emphasize. But a holistic consciousness necessitates an incorporation of all modalities of consciousness, of all faculties, both reason and the suprarational intuition propounded in Serrano's works. The messianism of Dre is also implicit in Serrano's works, though perhaps it is not Dre's messianism at all, but rather that of the Aryan, of Corky Avatara, not Jesus Ben Pantera or Jehoshu Hamas Chich, et.al. Perhaps the doom and gloom of the apocalypse of Christianism of Roma was also inherent in the mythos of the Aryan and the cycles of time. Only the Jew, an arch-plagiarist, hijacked these ideas and attempted to pervert them to serve his own ends of global supremacy. Perhaps the attempt to render linear the cyclicism of time was the Jews' own attempt at cheating God and salvaging themselves from their inevitable doom, not being a viria who can resurrect. Be that as it may, Serrano's work is rather Christian in some of its symbolism, such as the reference to Christos Lucifer Watton, the Christ archetype. The notion of history as cyclical or as linear being an inevitable progression towards destruction and the rebirth in a spiritually elevated state is inherent in the Aryan mythos and undoubtedly has its counterpart in cosmic law, the divine will, if it could be spoken of in those terms. The works of Serrano contain much in the way of detailed historical evidence and speculation not easily discoverable everywhere and for that reason are worthy of note-taking. The occult green language of his writings are a veil not easily penetrated, and yet behind that veil is concealed gnosis which must be implemented and understood by the aspiring Aryan to overcome his vigorized state of involution. Serrano is an esotericist philosopher-poet for modern times who may serve as a guide along the yellow brick road towards the emerald city of the green ray, the Nunc Stans, the eternal now, of Eternia and beyond the world of transient illusion. Universalist Psychopathology Part 1, The Psychopathology of Judeo-Christianity. The notion that something is good in and of itself, namely a moral absolute, rather than simply being good for something, relative to the being who qualifies it as a good, is inherent in Christianity, the religion of moral absolutes, where all things are structured by its hegemonic influence as either good, that which is approved of by the abstract anthropomorphic God, or evil, that which receives the censor of this same fictional deity. This deity, of course, is represented by the self-appointed priestly caste, those who have a direct pipeline to the deity by virtue of their mystical qualities of moral superiority and brain pollution from birth regarding the sophistical intricacies of their textual closed system called the Bible, the last word on all things human and divine according to its compilers, the priestly caste. Thus the harder terror of Christianity qualifies it as Christ's insanity as either one's actions, and in some his character, is good and meets with the acceptable level of approbation of the masses, or is evil and meets with their condemnation. Failure to see the larger horizon of life beyond this false dichotomy is adequate to qualify the blind adherent as insane, by virtue of his her extreme level of cognitive dissonance and failure to recognize the limitations which have been imposed upon the mind by those priestly caste self-appointed elect. Good or evil, as judged by those who are the totalitarian deity's representatives. An inability to recognize reality as mediated through a distorted mental filter placed upon the mind by repetition of dogma and classical conditioning in the indoctrination center called public schools and churches is another symptom of this psychopathology. Only information that supports the dogma, and is not only consistent therewith, but is on it a one correlation therewith, and allows no room for otherness, is permitted. Thus the mind is rigidly molded through these processes to operate according to its programming by the priestly caste and its minions in the hierarchy. Willful ignorance is the recipe and recourse of these sheep-like followers of external authority, the sheeple in colloquy, who maintain their identity as dutiful followers, as good parishioners of their overlords. This they subconsciously understand to be the conditio sine qua non of their permission to feed from the public trough, and upon a vague recognition of any thought or idea which is not a replication of the party line, they immediately enter into this state, bracketing off any potential threat which is to say anything not bearing the kosher seal of approval. This bracketing off process, the process by which cognitive dissonance is achieved so that the perceiver constructs a mental map of the world which bears no relation to the objective territory, is initiated through various facial and physical gestures, from papillary dilation to sniffing or coughing or a fluttering of the eyes, as a means to confirm in the ignorant's mind that he is a good believer who has no properties or attributes of the other, who introduces or attempts to introduce information into the closed system that is the religious zealot's mind. This false consciousness, a refusal to recognize what is really before one, and yet simultaneously and absurdly positing it as an existential threat, necessitating the zealot to enter into this process of bracketing off as a mechanism of maintaining adherence to the dogma they identify as the source of their continuance in this world, their life's blood as it were. A further psychological extrapolation of this state of cognitive dissonance and the hypocrisy it manifests itself in is the claim made by the proponent of Christ's insanity to be beyond judgment, save by their authoritarian deity who monopolizes this function. This itself, this false humility, is judgment as it establishes itself through the judgment as faculty of reason as a subject and a predicate, a modality of thought of a thinker who is structured thereby as a judge who yet supersedes judgment through this false consciousness and cognitive dissonance. To refrain from judgment, or to suppress one's natural innate tendency to judge, which is to say to posit something as something, to qualify and make a thing an object of thought. In short, to think of something as an object of one's consciousness and to impose one's conscious awareness on the world of phenomena. This is considered in Christ insanity immoral, prohibited as judgment is mine, saith the Lord. Thus at all times one is prohibited from rational thought or reasoning, and thus must live in a state of cognitive dissonance, wherein nothing but permissible contents of consciousness exist, namely those inculcated into the mind by priestly caste manipulators who refuse to permit their flock from straying from the narrow walkway to and from pen and trough. Another instance of the psychopathology of Christ insanity is the concept of the moral obligation of giving to those who are materially less advantaged than oneself. This, however, contradicts the above mandate of refraining from judgment as it implies a recognition of the distinction between socio-economic types and the necessity of equalizing the unequal through a communistic redistribution of wealth. The act of one's giving and the other's taking implies an inequality not only of material goods but of power, the ability to give given the superior position on a material basis and the necessity of taking what is given based on the relative disadvantage and need. This dichotomy of master and slave implies judgment as a condition of the giving of the gift as well as a self-reflexive judgment of oneself as master and depositing through this means of the same thing. This egotistic gesture of magnanimity wrapped up as it is in the neurosis of self-abasement, which is the cardinal sign of Christ insanity, namely a suicidal consciousness based on sin expiation, purports to be a benefit to the other, but is in reality only a benefit to the self as master dominating slave, who thereby controls the slave in subjection to his power. Sin expiation or guilt complex is another trait of this religious creed that entails a recognition of oneself as innately problematic or defective, having fallen from grace or become a devolved being who has created this state, or had it created for him, by God. Out of the failure to adhere to the commandments of the authoritarian God, which failure is paradoxically innate. Thus one who is an adherent of this creed is both a cause and effect of his sinful nature, never seeming to attain redemption from those sins from his external authority save through a perpetual neurotic obsession with their expiation, though having to perpetually self-reflect and evaluate whether his actions correspond with these law table dictates, which again contradictorily is a judgment, the end result of causal reasoning and understanding. The psychopathology of sin expiation is the basis of Christ insanity. All actions or omissions that a Christian performs or undergoes are oriented around this axis of the law of an anthropomorphic deity who rewards and punishes the behaviors of those he governs, the righteous being those who slavishly follow the law and the sinners being those who violate it through their sin, that is actions which exist outside of the realm of divine legal permissibility. Given the alleged omniscience of God, who is thereby perpetually aware of all thoughts and actions performed, the zealot is inculcated with the consciousness of extreme inhibition that hamstrings more natural action, that leads to the correlative psychopathologies of shame, guilt, and a sense of obligation to the external deity to clean one's slate of sins through appropriate expiation procedures. the touted virtue of this inhibitive consciousness is only such within the rubric of Christ insanity, whereas within that of naturalistic ethics it is a vice. Thus Christ insanity is anti-nature morality, as it violates the natural imperative of the prolongation of one's own life through cultivation of a suicidal ethos which orients itself around the expiation of sin. The consciousness of having sinned is called guilt, and this mental state of having an imperative to expiate sin is the underlying foundation of Christ insanity as psychopathology. However, it is as a mode or corollary of the fundamental principle of Christ insanity that being a groundless belief in a fictional anthropomorphic God who is alleged to have died for the adherent's sins and thus is owed a like treatment, namely for the adherent to live as a dead being haunted by this guilt complex of sin expiation as ethical imperative. Being a true believer is the underlying root of the mental weed that is Christ insanity, as no sense of moral obligation to discharge sins would exist given that there is no command standing above one coercing compliance through threat of a punishment worse than a living death. Given the impossibility of conformity to an impossibly high standard, the stage is set for the adherent to be perpetually inculcated with this sense of having done wrong simply through not having done what is considered right in the eyes of the supreme dictator of all things in and possibly outside of the material plane. Thus one is constantly in a state of fear that he has not made the grade in Wova's kingdom, and thus must struggle to tighten the knot around his neck to discharge whatever sin might remain. The impossibility of upholding this standard and applying it concretely leads to another feature of the psychopathology that is Christ insanity, namely the inevitable result of the zealots not practicing what he preaches, that is hypocrisy. Given the necessity of competition in the material world, and the natural inequality which obtains between people or bipedal beings called humans, the inevitable result is an unequal distribution of wealth. Given this unequal distribution of capacities and attributes which are a result of biology, this hypocrisy enter into a feedback loop type cycle with the guilt complex which exacerbates the latter, leading to more and more rigidification and neuroses of feign inhibitive nature, which in turn creates more hypocrisy given the natural tendencies that exist in all bipedal beings called human and the impossibility of their desired supersession. The desire for the natural instincts to be superseded or even annihilated is inherent in Christ insanity, whose false promises of a beyond or heaven or hell afterlife are directed towards the extinction of all natural instincts and inclinations which are qualified as sinful and a transgression of the law, adherence to that which is destructive of those instincts being obligatory. Thus can be seen that Christ insanity is a religion of spiritual suicide, adherence to which may wind one up in heaven, but which most certainly makes of life a living hell. With respect to neuroses rooted in these natural instincts and biological drives, Christ insanity rewires one's consciousness towards inhibition and suppression or oppression of natural drives. Sex, survival, and war, the defense of the herd or tribe of which one is a part, and the subjugation of opposing forces, not simply for self or tribal defense alone but for territorial conquest, Lebensraum and expansion of one's own kind and one's own self by extension. The sex instinct is inhibited in the Adam and Eve story, it being biblically considered sinful to involve oneself in fleshly pleasures of this nature outside of the conception of children, which is the only prescribed window of opportunity through which the inhibited sex instinct is permitted to manifest itself. As a consequence of this lack of sexual release, a build-up of tension occurs which manifests itself in deviant forms of sexual expression such as worship of the female deity Mary Magdalene and pedophilia, especially amongst the priesthood who are denied all sexual release and have recourse to that which can be obtained, and this clandestinely. The development of a totalitarian mindset whereby everything must become an object of control is a substitute for an impossible self-control and an extrapolation of one's own self-denial towards that of another, denial of their liberties, a curtailment and control of their destinies. Self-denial begets deviance, which manifests in the creation of conditions of an inharmonious nature, both within oneself and in the tribe society in which the adherent is situated. The spiritually suicidal nature of Christian sanity leads to the reduction of one's survival potential by virtue of its inhibition of self-defense, the turn-the-other-cheek doctrine which prohibits retaliation against enemies or their preemptive strike and destruction prior to their committing any physical sin by merely behaving in such a way that it suggests or implies that they are an aggressor. Thereby survival is inhibited as a window of opportunity exists through which to enable threats to enter, whereas in a more natural setting no such opportunity would exist as the threat would be detected and that window would be shut. Pathological altruism is one of the main drivers of Christ insanity in its praxis and is motivated by the guilt complex element as well as the priestly caste imperative of tithing, and manifests itself in the form of giving another one's shirt and cloak according to the imperative commands of the anthropomorphic deity. Such altruism is pathological as it fails to enable the survival of both oneself and one's tribe of which one is a part, and which latter in a natural set of circumstances untainted with this antinatural creed enables him to survive. The antinatural man, the adherent of Christ insanity, strikes at the root of his lineage with the acts of sin expiation and a pathologically altruistic motivation. Thusly spiritual suicide manifests itself through feeding the enemy from one's own storehouses and instructing them in the acquisition of power to be turned against oneself through their selfish devotion to personal power by all means necessary. The world now grows the cancer of non-white violence through the pathological altruism of Christ insanity externalized from the white culture and not preserved within. The salvation of Christ insanity lies in its tribalization, interiorization, and the severing of ties with those outside of one's own group. As an example, the black, white, and other races adopt Christ insanity as a tool of tribalistic racial self-government, a creed which binds those of a distinct ethnic group together through egotistically referring to themselves as the chosen people of God. Of course, some are more properly spoken of as such than others, those who embody and practice the tenets of the Bible in their pathological and non-pathological aspects which, when tribalistically construed, take on a healthy as Christ insanity goes, which is not without flaw. However, to salvage Christ insanity's useful and functional core Christianity, the altruism existent in this creed when confined within the bounds of one's own race is at the very least a workable recipe for survival. Hence to that extent it has its utility, though only to that extent. Attempting to disentangle Christianity from Christ insanity is easily done through racial awareness and construing Christianity along lines of racial tribalism. However, the antinatural ethos of this religious creed still creates schisma and conflict owing to the inhibitive and repressive nature of it, killing out desire yet transferring this desire for an otherworldly pipe dream having no foundation in reality. The irreconcilability of a fictional anthropomorphic deity with the thouted absolute, an absolute which is paradoxically finite and contingent living in a flesh body subject to spatio-temporal transient conditions, makes for another fable beyond both knowledge and reasonable belief. Hence recourse to blind faith is had as a necessary condition both of maintaining and establishing the creed as the way, the truth, and the light of crediting it with legitimacy. The behavior encapsulated in the term pity consists of the zealots displaying a sorrowful and loving attitude towards those relatively disadvantaged, which reflexively enables him to cultivate a positive feeling state and a sense of self-importance through having the capacity to display these emotions as another regarding type who think of others instead of simply thinking about himself, and thereby upholds, paradoxically and even contradictorily, his identity as a giver, a Jesus figure who redistributes wealth as a mechanism of the acquisition of personal power, the magnanimous master who binds to himself his dependent slave through this gesture of other regard. Pity implies one can feel what the other feels and identify himself with that other, also known as sympathy with the suffering of the other. This can be psychopathological when the other is an anemia foreigner with whom one not only has no organic biological relationship, but with whom a negative form of relationship exists, such as in the above cases. In such a case, pity or sorrowing over the suffering of others is either regarding their circumstances and the desire for them not to be in those circumstances, or a sorrowing over their essence or character in the mode of acknowledging them or constructing them ideationally as a defective or sinful being over whose alleged sins sorrow must be felt. Such cases amount to passive aggression, a desire to construct the identity of the other and imply they are deficient or problematic in some way. Insofar as the zealot seeks to construct the other, they are aiming at power, at a desire to portray or envision themselves as a master whose divine omniscience can judge others, as they are making them an object of knowledge controllable by the zealot's will. Pity is for the weak and can be a means for the weak to dominate those stronger than themselves. Passive aggression is yet another modality of the Christ insanity doctrine, which underpins the adherents' relations with the other as well as fellow adherents, and facilitates the hypocrisy of the zealot through creating the appearance of turning the other cheek while in reality striking against the other in such a way as to avoid being understood or liable for the act which purports to be other than it is, namely the reaction of a victim, or the pretense of benevolence. Passive aggression is itself hypocritical, as it falsely represents itself in a way other than it is, as above stated. The inherent hypocrisy of Christ insanity necessarily manifests itself in the form of passive-aggressive behavior, given that it purports to be about love and peace, etc., when it is mainly concerned with power and control for the priestly caste. Also, given the inhibition inherent in it, the only form of vengeance or retaliatory action possible is this, as an overt display of aggression would be anathema, given that it deviates from a saccharine, loving and peaceful nature which is prescribed as mandatory by the priestly caste through their mouthpiece Jesus, or is it vice versa? Willful ignorance is another modality of this psychopathology, wherein a cognitive dissonance exists while simultaneously often implicitly acknowledging the reality as a means of demonstrating one's contempt or vilification of the reality, such as in the case of the other displaying an appearance or behavior which is of less value than that of the willfully ignorant. The edict to judge thee not operates in the mind of the zealot under these conditions and inhibits an acknowledgement would imply judgment, namely that thing in question is what it is, and the very acknowledgement would be a violation of this command from upon high and through the mouths of the priestly caste who prescribe all behavior not saturated in pleasantries. Self-absorbency is another feature of this religion which necessitates, by virtue of one's sinful nature, actions leading to deprivation of natural proclivities such as pleasure and a sense of accomplishment or material wealth, these latter being sinful and egotistic, not altruistic, necessitating, according to the doctrine of Christ insanity, an expiation of these sins through the chastisement of self through self-critique or humility, a downplaying of one's virtues so as not to cause offense to the other. This sin expiation complex, which adheres to the zealot perpetually throughout their lifetime and serves as a curtailment of natural proclivities, only receives temporary discharge through the above actions, never ceasing to undermine one's worth and its expression through actual good works, not merely the good works of Christ insanity, which are all self-denying and even destroying acts such as giving another one's shirt, etc. Giving to those within one's tribal group is of course natural and laudatory, however only to the extent it doesn't lend to the diminution of one's own power and property, unless extreme measures are necessary, such as in times of war. Resentment, as Nietzsche spoke of, is another element of the essence of Christ insanity, given that the hypocrisy of equality is propounded as the goal, which of course is an impossible one, as no equality exists in nature, and yet Christ insanity seeks as the realization of this goal a kingdom of heaven upon earth with all adherents of its creed, by virtue of their faith and mere belief, partaking of the largesse of this realm of milk and honey. The concrete fact of inequality of capacity and inequality in terms of the distribution of resources generates this resentment in the minds of the have-nots or lumpenproles and inflames their already resentful nature when they come into contact with superior beings whose superiority they ascribe to circumstantial factors which can be modified by social engineering and outright violence if need be. After all, they reason in their irrational minds, since heaven awaits the righteous, the punishment of the sinners is simply God's will, etc. And, with the incentive of loot in mind and driven by a moral superiority complex, they leap at the throat of their natural superior and seek to extinguish his life to redistribute his blood among the victims of his superiority who were offended by the sight of a star which shone brighter than themselves and so sought to blot it out of the firmament so theirs may shine the brighter and they might bask in the false light of their ego, contentedly limiting their possibilities to that of the lowest common denominator. Insofar Christ insanity manifests itself politically in the form of communism, the equalization of the unequal, who are then rendered equally worthless, exhausting their higher potentialities in the mire of hedonistic abandon and priestly caste worship, living for bread alone as well as the circuses their priestly masters contrive to keep them under their thumb and chained to their servitude. Resentment as a pathological trait shackles one to the lower mind and inhibits any real cultivation of a kingdom of heaven within oneself, sacrificed at the cost of kingdom of heaven upon earth ruled by authoritarian priestly caste despots who continue to put downward pressure upon their serfs to drive them into greater states of devolution. Resentment is the recognition of the inferior of their own inferiority in relation to the superior against whom this negative attitude is directed in attempts to comfort the inferior over the cyclical wound he experiences under these conditions. This behavior is inherent to Christ insanity, which operates in a downward spiral progression to reduce the superior to the state of the inferior, ostensibly for the good of all, but in actuality the reverse. The priestly caste, endowed with hypocrisy and false humility only before God, yet is representatives of this fictional deity, use resentment as a mechanism of destroying enemies for the greater enrichment of their personal power and enslavement of the blind masses to their will. False humility masks their power play and establishes them in the mind of the unconscious mass as shepherds towards whom the flock must look for their clover and inevitable shearing and slaughter, as the afterlife is superior and the purpose of all that is worldly according to the doctrine render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's. Thus the priestly caste prospers while the sheeple are shepherded to the grave. This priestly caste is comprised of the creators of Christ insanity, the so-called Jews and their puppet, Shabbos Goyim, the Freemasons, and Catholic orders, have devised this creed as a totalitarian control mechanism for the aforementioned purposes. A lower-tier adherents, the liberal bourgeoisie and communist extremists comprised of a motley group of mixed-race devolved humanity on the left, as well as Judeo-Christians and ethnically unconscious or insufficiently conscious patriotic kosher conservatives on the right, all work against their own best interests given the way their programming runs, consciously or unconsciously, along the lines of Christ insanity, namely towards a living death and a perpetual suicide of sin expiation. They fail to understand that their security lies only in the better type of humanity, and that their decapitation by the enraged mob would result in the destruction of the mob itself and slavery for those still considered useful by the priestly caste. Those creators are simultaneously destroyers, and their creative destruction weaves a web of finitude, limitation, and death. This totalitarian mindset derives itself from and recapitulates the tyranny of their Saturnian Godwova, or Jehovah as it is spelled, which God is the point of solar system origin from whence they came, namely the planet Saturn. Their control freakish mentality is a microcosm of the Saturnian macrocosm, their consciousness being in tune with that planetary entity which governs their behavior and action. Control of externality, of the external environment, control of information and the restriction of its access to themselves exclusively, as well as their sacrifice on the altar of their god. Those of their charges who cease to have value as tools to themselves are all features of Christ's insanity, testament to its psychopathology. Wova, aka Saturn, embodies the character of the psychopath, narcissistic, obsessive-compulsive, control-freakish, lacking in empathy, sympathy, deceptive, cruel, murderous. This character has a trickle-down effect upon the priestly caste, who are incited by their master, Lord Wova, to adopt similar traits, not merely through indoctrination through teachings of men, but through bio-spiritual sympathy, being materializations of this divine demonic presence which overarches their behavior. The omni-nature of Wova is mirrored in that of his children, who display similar traits, looking upon themselves as the children of the Absolute, and thereby the Absolute by proxy, which implies an extreme narcissistic personality disorder. They look upon all others, if at all, as mere tools for exploitation, born to serve themselves, the chosen ones, and when no longer of utility, discarded as a sacrifice of excess energy to Wova, who thereby vampirizes their energy, absorbing it into himself. This vampirical tendency also manifests itself in these chosen folk, the Jews, through their ritual murder practices, which is a microcosm of the macrocosms of the godlike act of mastery which is implied in their deciding the life or death of others. This posits themselves as the priestly caste, as gods in miniature, whose humility before Wova qualifies them to serve as his instrument upon Gaia, shearing the sheeple via taxes and tithes, and slaughtering them in sacrificial murder via allopathic medicine, war, chemtrails, GMOs, etc. Obsessive-compulsive behavior is displayed in the chosen few and their deity in attempting to micromanage every facet of life, to reduce all things to quantitative terms so that all results are measurable and thereby controllable through centralized authority. Paranoia is another trait of the chosen ones, who are perpetually alert to others, detecting them and understanding how they operate and what motivations they have, as being discovered in their evil would elicit a backlash against them and threaten the fragility of their panopticon system of control. Wova is a jealous god, and before him no other gods shall there be. As above, so below, so it is with the chosen few, who will tolerate no contestants to their authority, as is contained in their creed of even the best of the Gentiles should be killed, which underscores their preemptive attack against those who, even if only to a small degree of probability, would threaten their power and global plans. The authoritarian personality of this cabal and their master manifests itself through the control-freakish micromanagement which curtails the natural freedoms of those who lie beyond the pale, the goyim as they are designated by the chosen ones, which is Yiddish for beasts or cattle. Any questioning of those self-appointed masters of the multiverse is swiftly punished by extradition to the open-air prison called its surreal hell, Israel. From thence he is made one of the disappearedes. Hypocrisy is revealed in Christ's insanity when it preaches love of a putatively universal scope, but is really restricted to an amer intellectualized DEI or a slavish devotion to the anthropomorphic deity for his sacrifice of himself to himself in order to, how? Expiate the sins of the flock of Wova, the Saturnian shepherd with his crooked sickle, whose insatiable bloodlust demands a continual stream of sacrifices. This self-sacrifice demanded of the goyim is represented as love, and the goyim are subjected to extreme social pressure by the zealot to initiate Jesus through martyrdom. Thus love in this absurd form is self-hate to self-annihilation, and thus further points out the spiritual suicide that is Christ's insanity, which permits only self-loathing and hate and a transference of one's natural self-regard towards love of Wova, a black magic or technique of vampirism of one's own bioenergy by the priestly caste transmitting a portion to Wova, while themselves energetically vampirizing the remainder, as well as scapegoating the sinner as the cause of his own loss, while simultaneously applauding this same for his selfless denial of personal regard. Through his following in the bloody footsteps of Jews as his martyr figure of most venerable worship, Thus the love of Christ insanity can only be the love of Wova and his flesh form Jesus rather than his natural love of self and tribe. This ensures for the priest caste not only compliant and willing slaves but a slave who has no regard for self-preservation of the preservation of his own kind. That hatred also is circumscribed in Christ insanity further strikes at the root of personal and tribal survival as not only is hatred of enemies prohibited but hatred of self for those who threaten the control system at least, i.e. whites, is obligatory as self-denial is obligatory and the former is implied in the latter as to deny oneself and the extension of oneself is tantamount to the commission of self-murder which proves that Christ insanity is spiritual suicide through denial of self-preservation and is an anti-natural religion whose preachers are preachers of death. A further suicidal trait of this creed is the dictate to take no care for the morrow. Hence the adherent is mandated to cease to concern himself with personal survival and having a regard for long-term planning and the consequence of his actions and to substitute this survival instinct with, as above, a willful ignorance of the consequences of his actions a reduction to the state of consciousness below even that of the primitive who at least knows that hunting during the mating season is a means of losing his dinner and cutting short his lifeline. This hand-to-mouth moment by named creed serves to bind him to the priestly caste from whom his daily bread is derived and as a means to acquire it before whom he must prostrate himself thus having no past to recall his accomplishments, being unable to employ reason to self-critique and assess what improvements are requisite in order to accomplish a better state of existence, he must have recourse to the moment as tomorrow will take care of itself. Its eventuality is not permitted to be controllable or influenced by his will, and thus he must cease to care or employ practical action to achieve purposes he is not only not allowed to achieve but also not allowed to conceive of. The obsessive compulsive focus on peace and love, especially regarding enemies, is also pathological as the overemphasis upon these two existential states leads to imbalances of the mind. Refusing to acknowledge willful ignorance and cognitive dissonance, hypocrisy, the inappropriateness and inordinateness of love and peace as the sole concern of behavior and attitudinal adjustment leads also to an undeveloped personality which is retarded relative to the naturalist, i.e. he who subscribes to a tribalistic and nature-based ethos which is the antithesis of the anti-naturalism of Christ insanity it being oriented around survival not extinction, as in the latter case peace simply means the negation of struggle which is the existence of the essence which is life, that which is dynamic and based around a play of forces and tensions that constitutes the fabric of the real. Love, meaning harmony in its real sense, but typically construed and adopted by the zealot as a happy feeling of positive emotion, in this form is overemphasized leading the zealot to behave as a pathological case forever strung out on happy vibes and attempting to radiate these vibes amongst others to boost the overall love vibration in accordance with the ethical prescriptions of the creed. This behavior obviously works against survival and a more broad-minded life wherein the possibilities of self-defense exist as the basis of continuing one's life in the material plane and the expansionistic behavior of conquest which is the motor force of evolution and self-development. Thus there can be no peace on earth as the earth is conditioned existence, a complex of forces from which no peace is had save in death. Even then the subtle bodies continue on and as occultists have said there is no death only life only with regards to Christ insanity in a true life but a living death fraught with the inhibitions and neuroses of attachment to an anti-natural creed, anti-natural in the sense of both contra-mundane and extra-mundane existence which itself paradoxically is neither peace nor love. Hence the root of Christ insanity is falsehood, and though the zealot has faith in his fictions he nevertheless has folly and his faith as faith without fact is folly. Mattel Part 2 The Psychopathology of Libertism. The foundation of the creed which is the descendant of Christ insanity is its modern representation aka libertism, which can be summed up in the phrase passion over reason, wherein the rational mind is underused, underdeveloped, and disengaged and is completely annihilated and supplanted by the emotional brain whenever certain environmental cues of stimuli are present in the environment which initiate this process of supersession. Operating within this unreasoning state and yet having to perform acts necessitating reason simply as a matter of survival within a world subject to transience, to causality, is clearly an impossibility, and what follows from the praxis of the liberal, hereafter referred to as the libtard, is the zealot's self-destruction. Through its own inner flaws and contradictions, libtardism destroys itself. The reasons for such will be discussed in the following, and its psychopathology diagnosed and a remedy prescribed. Given that libtards, the zealous adherents of libtardism, operate within the emotional brain as their modus vivendi and are thus retarded in their rational mental function, they are maladroit in facing the harsh realities of life as their emotional trajectory is towards maximizing pleasure and minimizing pain, which constitute the polemic of libtardism, wherein the former and it alone must be pursued and the latter and it alone must be avoided. Given that the world is full of pain and not pleasure for those whose pleasure consists of dopamine secretions and sensationalistic indulgence, the avoidance of its pains is an ethical imperative to the liberal, who accordingly lives in a state of cognitive dissonance, willful ignorance, thereby as a consequence jeopardizing their own survival, having failed to develop a capacity for suffering the hardships of life that necessarily accompany mundane existence. Clearly pathological, this rainbow road to pleasure palaces in a utopian dream world leads directly towards the abyss, given the failure to acknowledge and recognize instead of to ignore and avoid the impediments along this road, as this would induce sensations of pain, thereby reducing the quantity of pleasure by that much for the individual. The individual, the ego, is truly what the shaky superstructure of libtardism is based upon, doomed to fall through its inherent design flaw, namely that of the premise that the individual is so very ignorant, no man is an island entire unto himself, and therefore no man can exist exclusively by himself, especially in a developed modern society wherein an infinite complexity of agents exist who are bound to one another in relations of codependence. Even in a traditional society, a tribal and natural order of social relations prescribes that the individual subordinate himself to the collective and in fact find his identity therein, without which he would not have any authentic identity, but merely be another monad, an island unto itself having no fixed identity or vehicle for his own particular destiny, as there would be no concrete basis for same. From thence the egotism of libtardism becomes boundless and descends into the psychopathic. The solipsism, the serial killer and the suicide. All are consequences of the putative freedom conferred by libtardism, but which are merely the inevitable result of an authentic being, living in a state of existence where the self is detached, even if only in the consciousness of the libtard, from all determinants or influences of even its being, granting to it the illusion of freedom to do what thou wilt without any concrete situation upon which to base the identity of the possessor of this freedom, as all freedom is either freedom from or freedom for, freedom from what circumstances or agents one or a group or tribe seeks, or freedom for what these same conscious entities desire, not in the sense of the libidinal desire of the libtards, but the desire of that force of which he may be a part, which influences his destiny and enables its realization. The libtard, basing his judgments on solipsistic possessive individualism, fails to attain what had incarnated in the flesh to attain, or what he organically through his own being must attain in accordance with his own nature. Egotism and circumstantial states which reflexively refer to the ego are the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow road of libtardism, which consists of a perpetuation of a narcissistic personality disorder and a sensationalistic emotional rush, usually accompanied by copious outpourings of dopamine and adrenal hormones, which enable the libtard to exist within a mental state of pleasure for as long as possible. Physiologically, this leads to adrenal fatigue and depression through hypersecretion of dopamine and the inevitable crash through overtaxation of the neural circuitry and brain regions wherein these hormones are generated. Of course, the alternative is a life of bourgeois mediocrity, and inevitably this is the homeostatic default of the libtids insofar as this aim can, through the trial and error of extremes, continue to persist in living to drip-feed itself sufficient experiences and reactions thereto that it is programmed to associate with the principle of libtidism, namely the maximization of pleasure and the minimization of pain or max pleasure mean pain principle, the libidinal maximin principle, as it may be called. Infantilism is another trait of libtids psychopathology which entails the above behavior of willful ignorance, cognitive dissonance, narcissistic personality disorder, etc., all of which operate on the basis of an undeveloped consciousness oriented around the personality self as absolute and all else being mere irrelevancies or potential threats to the maximin principle's realization, whereby all non-self realities are at best tools or utilities for self-enrichment. This philosophy, if such it may be called, is inherently vampiric and cannibal in essence and descends even to these behaviors of the dark arts, as is evinced in Jewish ritual torture murder, the Jews being liberal in their core identity, being Lucifers who are not part of the kingdom of God or nature but merely live to sate their insatiable bloodlust by the least thoughtful means. Whenever the libtid is barred from their endless pursuit of self-satisfaction, the infantilism that underpins their behavior manifests itself in the coarsest forms of protest, violence against that which seeks to curtail their excesses, and rebelliousness for rebelliousness' sake, such as in the case of personal disfigurement, piercings, tattoos, plastic surgery, cutting, etc., or sexual excesses, deviance. This pursuit of freedom as a thing in itself is without foundation other than the freedom from authenticity, freedom from who one is as a particular type of being and which, absurdly, one is oneself and which makes one who he is. Insofar libtidism with its laudation of raceless universalism, wherein everyone is an individual, a floating signifier within a system of transient flux or becoming, destroys the being who must become who he is and thereby the destiny of that being. Hence libtidism also destroys itself. The contradictions of libtidism are those between the natural and the artificial created by the adoption of 1. The principle of individual sovereignty and 2. The pleasure principle, both of which are counter to nature and in a natural world are an unworkable and impractical ideology. These contradictions don't resolve themselves in a synthesis, but simply lead to destruction, and from thence the recovery of the natural from the influence of the artificial through the artificial destroying itself through itself. These contradictions from a naturalistic ethical standpoint, a standpoint contra ethics of artifice, can be separated into virtue and vice or cosmos and chaos for those less materialistically more metaphysically inclined. The adoption of the following vices by the libtids in accordance with his programming is the ultimate cause of his pathology, which is its source in this indoctrination and a failure to follow a higher path of self-cultivation. First of the set of contradictions is that between the masculine and the feminine, the both of which libtids misconstrue in terms of their lower octaves, namely pacifistic weakness and boundless tolerance in the case of the feminine and violent aggression and authoritarian control in the case of the masculine, both conceptions of which fail to attain their higher octaves of intuition and receptivity and reason and creativity. The masculine in libtidism is painted with the blackest brush and is more or less anathema to the libtid, exclusive dominion accorded to the feminine, which it exalts as sacred. Hence the proscription of the liberal against violence, even the counter-violence of the defendant against assault, and the prescription of tolerance of all things, an embracing of all things regardless of their villainous nature and the consequences of doing so, which latter are disregarded given the underdeveloped reason of the libtids. The masculine is thus seen as a violation or violator of the sacred feminine sanctum sanctorum, a primitive phallic conception which is endemic to the libtids, whose overemphasis on the pleasure principle obscures its vision of all else and places the rose-colored glasses of love lust upon its eyes. The masculine is associated with evil and the feminine with good. Libtidism is the politicization of female psychology taken in its lowest octave and most primitive form. even intellectualized, it simply manifests itself in the form of para and illogic, failing to muster up the courage to face the information reality necessary for sound argumentation and sound judgment. Further to the feminine nature of libertism is its control freakishness, which takes the form of the nanny state in its politics and feminism in its character, a school mom shaking her finger at those who display behavior not explicitly permitted by the El Duchedas Mutter Act. Like a scold or nag, the libtard insists on violating the maxim live and let live and imposing upon the other the libtard's dictates and inverted norms, censoring and preventing any opposition as violence or hate.